BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Five Lives Rugby Union Daily.
Rugby Union Daily, Saturday night, on a day the Six Nations came alive. On any other day, Italy 31, Scotland 29 would be the big story, and it still is. But what drama here at Twickenham, an empty Twickenham, the lawnmowers are out, the stands are empty, and in shimmering white, the scoreboard says England 23, Ireland 22. The three wise men are here, Paul Grayson, Tommy Bow, and Matt Dawson. We often say to the victor the spoils on this post-match pod, so the first words to you, Dawson, Grace. Haven't heard Twickenham like that for a while, have we?
Oh, yeah, that was bouncing. I mean, literally the gantry was bouncing. I felt a little bit unsafe, to be honest. And I'm not sure the last time it has been like that, Grace. I'm trying to recall not just the manner of the victory, but the sort of the historical poor performances has built it to. Well, and also I think the crowd can see the talent. Like, we can all see the talent, but have been frustrated that they've not been able to play like that.
It's a breakout performance for the crowd, isn't it? They've been Woody, Clive Woodward, that is, has called it the biggest, England's biggest pub or whatever, and people are up and down and there's no interest, and that's because of what's on the pitch and what they're looking at. Today was a breakout performance for that England team. They set off like a house on fire and they stayed at it for the entire period of the whole thing, whether they were in front or behind, and they gave the England the Twickenham faithful something to shout about, and oh my God, did they shout about it, because it is a symbiotic relationship between the team. You've got to do something to get them going. They'll sing all day if you're actually delivering on the field. If you're not doing anything, they'll eventually get bored and sit and wait. It was tumultuous. It was awesome. Pitch side, deafening. Mm. Absolutely superb. And you always forget about the context. You're just playing against a spectacularly good Ireland team, and England have had to find something awesome to get a result. Forget about the championship. Just as an event, as a test match, it was bloody brilliant.
Yeah, a game of shuddering intensity and no little quality. So the Six Nations, not won by Ireland tonight. The Grand Slam is not on for the Irish. They will not emulate the French team of 97 and 98 and go back to back. They still, Tommy Bow, should wrap up the title. Scotland will have something to say about it. England could nick it in Lyon, but Ireland have a healthy 16 points. But they will be desperately disappointed losing today, and the slam has gone.
Yeah, it'd be really interesting to see how this Irish team bounce back from this loss, because they were massive, massive favourites going into this game. The bookies gave them a 12-point spread. When do you ever see that? For an away team, you have to go to Twickenham. And listen, I think they'll put their hands up. The English team were phenomenal today, that Ireland pushed them all the way. But they never touched the ball. They never went through phases, never actually got a chance to put this English defence under pressure. And there was a lot of talk about England's line speed. And yes, that worked whenever Ireland had the ball. But they spent, I think it was 67, 70% possession for England. And they made great choices with that ball. And yes, like, Ireland went ahead, 4 points ahead going in at halftime, but they could have easily been 15 points behind. So there's a lot of question marks over that Irish performance, but I think credit has to go to England. The place was rocking here. They were going into this game with so many question marks and so much pressure, and they delivered. Fair play to them.
There was no hint of complacency all week from the Irish players, but there was such confidence from the Irish rugby public. And not to be wise after them, but we flagged on the pod and we flagged on Five Live. It's a game of sport, and you put anyone under pressure, even this all-conquering Ireland side, and things can happen. And England did that.
It's the beauty of sport. You said it just at the full-time whistle. This is why we love sport, because you can't recreate that drama in anything else in the world. England, we're going into this game. You know, did they question that they could really beat this Irish team? But boy, they delivered the opening couple of minutes. They were just phenomenal. They played with the tempo that we haven't seen of this English team in so long. And the crowd got 100% behind them. And I have to say, I witnessed some pretty epic moments in stadiums over the last couple of months, thinking of the World Cup, thinking about the anthem, the French anthem in Marseille. But boy, the roar from the crowd here on the full-time whistle when Marcus Smith knocked that over, that was right up there.
That's what you get on Five Live.
A lot
of fun. Stay with us for the ride, Tommy. Paul Grayson, if we go through the game, you know, England started, well, actually, I was going to say England started like a train, but Ireland were really smart the first five, weren't they? You know, powering through the middle of the ruck, Crowley with a penalty, then that England try from Ollie Lawrence down the left. But Ireland went in 12-8 up, even though England had so much play in that first half. And then when Lowe hit that, what we thought was the killer try, or the killer couple of tries, but to go, when they were 17-8 up with Lowe's first, that was a moment when, you know, an England team that has been up and down could have folded, and Ireland could have powered to victory. So huge credit to England that even though Ireland got that foothold, they were able to come back.
Huge credit, because the first half, as Tommy's just said, England could have been in relatively clear water. George Ford missed a straightforward kick from in front of the post. They'd had their opportunities in the Ireland 22, but it was the nature of how they played. And we said in commentary, I can't remember whether it was you, Dorsey, said, don't change what you're doing. It's got you into this position. Yes, the scoreboard maybe isn't reflective of the possession and the dominance that you've had, but if you carry on doing that, you will get your opportunities. And that's the only way they're going to win. You're not going to win by backing off and saying, okay, we're behind now. Let's do what we did in Scotland and go box kick for the last 20 minutes to try and win the game, because it doesn't make any sense. And they carried on playing some barnstorming performances. I mean, Ben Earl, I watched him do that for the under-20s when you're like, well, yeah, it's the under-20s. And he's now doing it against the best team, second best team in the world, which is it's awesome. But the intent that England played with meant that the contest was theirs. They were in the contest and it was theirs to win, because they were being creative. They weren't just focused on being risk-averse and destructive. They were actually creating their own attacking play.
And breaking that down a little, the lull in England's performance today was exactly when they stopped. They took their foot off the pedal and they started to go to their kicking game, and they were slowing it all. And thankfully, someone either on the pitch or on the touchline has relayed the message to say, you know, have a look, get your head up, look what's happening with the opposition, because Ireland were, I mean, they were shot to pieces because of all the possession and the quality of possession and the accuracy that England had in the first half. Ireland's defence was unbelievable. I mean, unbelievable defence, but it took it out of them. So come 20, 30 minutes to go, every time Ireland did get the ball in the last 20, 30 minutes, they looked a shadow of themselves. They had no pattern, they had no structure, but that was because of all of the endeavour that England had put towards the first part of the game.
The 6-2 split obviously told them, as well, because that was a huge gamble from Andy Farrell to.
But just it is a risk, Tommy. I mean, it looks great when in Marseille, when they bring on the cavalry, when South Africa did the 7-1 and got lucky / make your own luck and all that. But it's great when it works. But all it takes is an early injury.
Well, that's it. With Calvin Nash going off so early into the game, it just upsets the whole training, everything that you planned. It just sets it off a little bit, and particularly when you're already on the back foot. I think that was one thing that really went against them. And obviously Gibson Park happened to go onto the wing, then Frawley, who came on, he obviously had to go off with a HIA too, so those sort of things didn't go in Ireland's favour. Then Peter O'Mahony getting that yellow card, it was a cynical decision by him. It was one
he had to do it. If England win that ball, they score, they walk in, don't they?
I don't know,
give or take.
I think, listen, with one thing Ireland credit themselves is that never give up defence, and we saw how many times were England over the line or nearly over the line and Ireland somehow managed to pull them up short or something went against them. I think Peter O'Mahony giving away that yellow card, I mean, realistically Ireland were 17 points to 8 up just after half time. That is, you can't get a better position for one of the best teams in the world. And for them to relinquish that lead, Andy Farrell will be really, really annoyed about.
Tommy, you've got to get a bike to the airport.
I sure do.
You're getting out of town, aren't you? So one more on Ireland. The permutations are such that if they win or draw next week at home to Scotland, a Scotland side who will be smarting after losing in Rome, but one who will need a minor miracle to win the championship themselves, you know, overturn an 80-odd points difference. So it's still well and truly in Ireland's hands. But, you know, this just shows that winning one Grand Slam is tough. Going back-to-back is really tough. Even if, you know, we've all said that some teams in the Six Nations were struggling, it still shouldn't come easy, should it?
Yeah, well, we've talked about going back-to-back in Grand Slams, which would have been unbelievable. But we talked about the reason Ireland maybe have that chance is because there's a lot of teams on transition. And we're not seeing the France, the England, the Wales in the level that we have in the past. And I think that this maybe could be a landmark moment for Steve Borthwick and the style of rugby that this English team want to play. Ireland will go back to Dublin, probably on the same flight myself. They want to get out of town sharpish and regather, because it doesn't come much bigger than Scotland. They'll be kicking themselves after that Italy loss. Probably typical Scotland, is it? Shall we say that? Might upset a few people. But Ireland, I would expect, will regather themselves. They'll go back in the Aviva Stadium. Such a proud record over there, and they'll want to really make amends from this match.
Great to see you as ever, Tommy. Get on that bike, literally, not figuratively. It was 17-8 after that low try, and then Furbank and Earl scored, and then Lowe scored again. It just was a great, great game, wasn't it? To 2022 to Ireland, and then England. We're round about the halfway, Paul Grayson. Talk us through what you remember. I mean, we're not far after the final whistle here, but you were thinking, oh, is a drop goal range? But they managed to work a position where they were under the post to give Marcus Smith the chance. We'll hear from the match winner in a moment.
Yeah, and we said they've got the line out, but what they've also got is an Ireland team who don't give a penalty away. So they're going to get quick ball. You're going to be able to play. It's that scenario where you're almost, Dorsey, you were always closer to the action than me, almost goading them to go on then, go for that. Because you make one mistake there and that's the game. The penalty is easier than the drop goal, a static kick and goal at goal. But because they only got one good decision or one decision to make, Ireland, or maybe one shot at it, the pace that England could play at meant that they moved up the field 30 yards. And you're in that position then where it's like, well, actually, they're going to have to do something, because if they just keep being semi-passive, England are just going to score. So it gets to that point where then they did have to get stuck in. They did give a penalty away. England got the advantage, played a few more phases, got a second advantage, and it was only about 10 yards left of the post. Therefore, the drop goal was an absolute freebie because he got a tap in anyway. And
Dreamland stuff, isn't it, for a player at home when you've got the advantage and you're banging front like
that. Yeah, and you still got to do it. Marcus Smith did a great job of flicking it over, and he got really good height on his celebration jump in the air, which is massively impressive. He is a fast twitch person, but it was England's excellence that got him into that position from 2 weeks ago. What would you have said if you said England, right, they've got a line out 40 yards out and they've got to go through 15 phases to force a win? Would you have backed them to do it? Well, I wouldn't, because we've never seen him do it, not this iteration of the England team. Right. On today's performance, you'd think that all they've been focusing on this week is attack.
Mm. Yeah, and the word from the camp the last 2 weeks is that they kind of pivoted from defence to attack a bit, and it showed. And, you know, we spoke pre-match. One thing picking Emmanuel Feoboso, it's another thing getting him on the ball. And he got on the ball, and he made a bust down the right that ate up some yards.
From the off. And Ireland went after him, actually, in the game. They went after him in the air, which is, you would expect them to do it. I think you'd call it old school, Chris, when they full on Gary Owen in old money underneath the sticks, Feoboso and Furbank together, and they dealt with it well, and he was potent when he carried the ball, very physical, very great lateral movement and acceleration, but he didn't make any basic errors, did he, in the game? He didn't turn the ball over, he'd be loose in possession. He was excellent.
He was very tidy, as were,
well, everyone pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much everybody was tidy in their own way, for sure. But yeah, all of the things that we're talking about there have come because of the intent of that England side today. And the intent was an attacking manner. And, you know, it's what everybody has been bleating on about, whether you're in the press, whether you're a former player, whether you're a fan. With the dangerous players that England have, with the quality that England have, you know, they can create fast ball. They can create opportunities. They have got the aspiration to play like that. So, you know, I've got to be completely honest that the analytics and the stats need to get burnt. You know, they need to get chucked in the fire and just calm the whole analytical part down, because England have just proven that when you're out on the field, there is a huge amount of adaptation that has to be done on the field depending on how you want to play and who you're playing against. And England showed that today by their fast rucks. Therefore, Ireland can't get set, so they're not making as oppressive defensive tackles, but they're making more tackles. They're getting more tired. They're getting out of the line. You're giving the ball to England players on the front foot, attacking players on the
around.
Front foot.
Yep.
You've got threats. Mm. Yeah, absolutely got threats everywhere from nine. You know, George Ford they have to keep an eye on George Ford because he's going to find a gap. But then all of a sudden you've got Furbank on a lovely outside arc. So the Irish 13 channel is really difficult to defend. And if you miss that, you've got Feo Wabosso who's going to run around you in a phone box. So you've got four or five options, whereas previously it was oh, here we go.
Now what's
let's go into the slow box kick, and teams were lapping it up.
Well, it was Marcus Smith that prodded over the drop goal to send Twickenham into raptures, and here's Marcus Smith on the pod.
Yeah, that's pretty special. Obviously, from a personal level, to be ruled out of the first game was pretty gutting. I took a lot of time reflecting, and watching the boys from home was quite tough, but I kept in constant contact with the lads, and I was G'ing them on from my sofa at home, and to come back out today, to be welcomed in by the group again, and to play a small part in today's victory was up there for me as one of my favourite memories. Like I said, it's an absolute pleasure to play with those lads. I've loved every single minute being in camp, and like I said, when you've got forwards rumbling over, getting us on the front foot, and you've got outside backs who can cause chaos in small spaces, it makes my job very easy, and I loved it out there today in front of the fans and in front of my family as well.
When did you know the drop goal was on?
I think when it was right in front of the post. Plus the advantage made my job pretty easy. And like I said, Danny always puts it on a string for me. Makes my life very very simple, and that's my job. So I'm very lucky I got that opportunity. But as I said, I'm just grateful that I had another opportunity to play in the England jersey, and I'm very glad that we could beat Ireland.
And just a couple to finish. I know you've got to go and celebrate, Marcus. How big a win was this for this England side?
Yeah, well, it's obviously our third win in this year's tournament. It's another step forward. Obviously, Ireland have been probably the team to beat the last three or so years, and we haven't had the rub of the green the last few years. We've been close, but we haven't been able to pull it off. And I think today was testament to the hard work that we've all put in, everyone in the England camp. And these moments sort of spur you on to kick on and believe and grow as people and as a team. And I think that will galvanise us, hopefully with a big test away in France next week. But we'll enjoy tonight.
Quick one about Danny. He gave you the ball on his 100th.
Yeah, quite selfless from Danny. I thought he was going to go for a little snipe, to be honest. He was that close to the line. But no, I've loved playing with Danny. He's always looked after me ever since I stepped in the Quinns change room. I've been very lucky to play with him many times for Quinns, and even more special to play with him for England. I used to watch and idolise him growing up with all his hairstyles, and to be able to play with him and celebrate like that at the end with him is really special for me. And I know his family are very proud of him, and I'm super proud of him as well.
So Marcus Smith, the match winner, Paul Grayton and Matt Dawson. And what are we here? 7:23, no one in the stands apart from England players signing some autographs, going off to do their thing. We've seen Danny Kerr's family, wife Jodie, and kids Blake and Cora and Rocco. They'll remember that one forever, won't they? And so this place, you can and have left Twickenham, haven't you, in recent years, just feeling a little bit flat. But you know, we touched upon it at the top of the pod, the atmosphere, you know, the players still signing autographs with the remnants of the crowd. You know, it shows what a great place Twickenham can be when England get it right.
Well, I mean, on, you know what I'm like with the whole lap of honour bit, that teams seem to be able to, and particularly England, seem to do it every single game. England were out on the field doing the lap of honour for the least amount of time, maybe in the last 18 months. They virtually ran around the pitch. The stadium was pretty much full. The place was jumping. They paid their respect, and then they went into the dressing room because they wanted to party and have a beer and crack on with their mates. That's how it's done. And I know I'm bleating on about it again, but it's just this siege mentality that England had today that the crowd stayed to applaud and respect, and that's all it needs. You know, England have got to take ownership of this performance today. The players have got to take ownership of this performance now and say, this is us, this is how England are going to play. So when anybody, anywhere around the world, oppositions or fans can watch England go, this is exactly how they play, this is their format, blimey, they're going to be tough to beat. But that's going to include standing up against some, you know, some of the coaches, some of the comments, some of the medias, and own it. And listen, if England carry on playing like that in 3 years' time, they are going to be playing in those quarterfinals, semi-finals and finals of World Cups. There's no question.
Right, hold that thought. More to come from here at Twickenham, and we reflect on those events in Rome, and that is all after this.
My name's Joe Wilkinson and I'm doing a podcast because I love football. But what I love more is the idea of being friends with a professional footballer. The footballer I'd like to be friends with is Patrick Bamford. Hello, Patrick. Will you be my friend?
That's yet to be decided.
Okay, not what I was hoping.
My Mate's a Footballer is a BBC Sounds podcast with me, Patrick Bamford and Joe Wilkinson.
If you weren't married, who would your ideal date be?
Julia Roberts.
That was quick. If I was you, I'd have popped a pause in.
Search for My Mate's Footballer on BBC Sounds.
Five Lives, Rugby Union Daily.
Right, reflections on what happened in Rome. I mean, fair to say, and we debated this Thursday night, you thought it might be an Irish procession.
There was three away wins, didn't I?
You know, the odds.
I went three away wins.
You went three away wins. The odds on three home wins were 75-1.
But no.
They were 75-1. And Pete Breakwell, who often messages me on Instagram, big England rugby fan, big fan of the pod. He messaged me this morning and went, three home wins, 75-1. Obviously, didn't go near it, of course, but that's sport.
Imagine being in a rugby syndicate of mates and not having a punt at that.
Yeah. Well, that is how unlikely people thought Italy would win, England would win, and France against Wales in Cardiff. And with Wales the home side, we will wait to see what happens there. But that's what's magic about it, isn't it, Grace? We were worried this might be an Irish procession, this Six Nations. We were worried that Scotland sweep Italy away, Ireland sweep England away, and we're going, oh, it's after the Lord Mayor's show, it's after the World Cup, it's a bit meh.
Did you ever think it was going to be a procession today?
Oh, I thought that Ireland would be comfortably better than England.
Did you?
Purely based on what we've seen. Not potential, because we've talked about the likes of Tommy Freeman, Ollie Chessam, Ben Earl, like barnstorming ball carriers, leading their club teams, playing well in Europe. And you're like, why does it not work when they come together for England? So I wouldn't row back on anything that I've said about today. And I was like, if it rains, England might be all right, because they played well in the rain a couple of times. What we've seen today is a complete mental shift in their approach to the game. They were creative. They were doing something. How do you beat a team like Ireland? Well, you don't let them have the ball, because when you do let them have the ball, they will move you through 45 phases and then walk in somewhere. But if they haven't got the ball, they're the guys who are having to make multiple decisions. And England played at textbook. They played flat to the line, but they played flat to the line with multiple options. George Ford takes the ball short off a line out. He's got Ollie Lawrence, he's got Freeman out the back, he's got Faber Boso, and he picks the right man who gets him on the front foot. You've got Martin carrying around the corner, or Chessam, and you're on the front foot again. Mitchell then pops out because he's like, oh, I can get to the second defender here and draw him in. And then Jamie George makes another break, and then you're on. It's rugby, isn't it? But done superbly well today, and then over and over and over again. And then when they didn't have the ball, Martin hit like a demon. Ellis Genge defended brilliantly. Sam Underhill suddenly visible again, because Sam Underhill makes breathtaking chop tackles at the right time. We hardly mentioned Maro Itoje today. Maro normally is like the standout bloke who's either giving away a penalty or making the big turnover. Because everybody was involved today, he was hardly mentioned in commentary, because other people were taking up those roles, and it was a performance of the group and not just a bunch of individuals.
It was like a sort of like a death of with a thousand cuts by a thousand cuts, when England were a relatively quick line out round the front, or all of a sudden England were throwing three pods up, or George Furbank's counter attacking from a slightly long kick into touch, quick throw, let's go. There were just loads and loads of these little moments that were just kidney blows to Ireland, which ordinarily, they're like, yeah, we can take that, right, we're going to bounce back. And they did bounce back, but then over time, we've said it before, over 40, 50, 60 minutes, you could see Ireland were bleeding, and then they would have their injuries, and then they lost their shape a little bit, and Conor Murray came on, and Ireland lost their fizz that Gibson Park brings, and all of a sudden it was whatever the come on, help me now. The full, it's only a flesh wound.
The Holy Grail.
There you go.
The Black Knight.
Yeah, the Holy Grail. You know, I'm fine. I've got one arm's gone. I can still keep going. You know, but eventually, Ireland, as you described it earlier on in the pod, Chris, they sort of cracked, and England walked themselves up to a penalty stroke drop goal.
I gave England a real, real shot today, but I don't think any of us saw the attack like that. And that's what I think is going to please the fans most. You know, I had a quick word with the RFU chief exec as I was going down to the tunnel to speak to Marcus Smith, and he was like, how about the attack? It's the word on everyone's lips. And it started when Furbank counted it back right from the off, as if to say, right, they're going to go for it today.
But he made the right decision, because it was a loose kick, because there was pressure, and James Lowe hit an accidental spiral, so it was a really flat kick that got to Furbank quick on the halfway line. He did exactly what he does for Northampton. Head off infield, found his mate, who crashed into the winger. They could have gone first phase. Then Furbank carried on round the corner, was second receiver off George Ford. Absolute classic take and give. So his first two things in the game, create the counter-attack and then be the... He's the killer pass. He's the one that makes it a try. And it happened in seconds. And then Ollie Lawrence is in the corner. All the great teams score at pace by doing the fundamentals unbelievably well.
There's no point having a dynamic forward pack who makes metres and gets behind the gain line if then you don't have the armoury to do stuff with it. And that's what, you know, Steve Borthwick said just downstairs. That's the template, you know, big, hard forward effort with the ability to score. And it's easy to get excited. You know, those of us followed England rugby for a long time, waiting for this kind of breakout performance. But it's just one game. Now the challenge.
Do you not think that feels different as a one game, Chris? Do you not think?
Yes, 100%. I think there were similarities perhaps with the South Africa game in 2021. Do you remember when Joe Marchin went through, Rafi Quirk scored, and...
Marcus Smith?
Marcus Smith, kicked a winning penalty, and there was again the feeling about England and a new era and everything.
I don't think their game management was as good as it was
today. I don't think that box side in 21 in a November test was as good or in as good a place as this Irish side in the Six Nations. The box sometimes come up in November a little bit experimental. Some players can't play because of club country relations or whatever, or Reg 9. So I think that was a better performance. And you would have to say, without resorting to hyperbole, the best England performance since the 2019 World Cup semi-final. So now the challenge for both of you when it comes to England is, right, if that's the standard, and they're not going to reach that standard every week, but Lyon next week, try and get near that, try and show that's what this England team is about going forward.
The aspiration is to do that with the ball. They've clearly made a shift in defence. There was some good defence today, some really good collisions, some absolute howlers, but, you know, Henry Slade is in that tough spot at 13 where he's like, oh, I don't know whether to hit this guy or get in the passing lane. You get that wrong, somebody makes a break and invariably they score. But you have less decisions to make as a defender when you've got the ball, because you're actually doing something with it. And I guess the gripe for the longest time has been that England building on kick and chase, yeah, fine, no problem with that, do your box kick, we're going to force you into errors by blitzing, but then have no idea what to do with the ball when they get it. The shift in focus, confirmed by some of the lads on the touchline today, that they're, you know, they practice defence, they don't talk about it, they've talked about attack, they've practiced attack. What are you going to do from, not just from turnover and counter-attack, which is a massive part of the game because you get to play against unstructured defences, what are you going to do when it's your ball, it's your shot, you know what's happening for the next 25 seconds. The opposition do not. And that is the basis of the game. Get the ball, set off, try and create a score. And they did that brilliantly today. And it just shows that a switch in mentality and a focus on adding, being creative, not just being destructive. Mm. Easy to destroy, very difficult to build. If they play like that with lads like Martin and Chesham and Earl, Genge had one of his best 50 minutes today because he was clearing rooks and carrying the ball at the right time, passing it at the right time, double working. That sort of thing, England can play like that all the time. You're not going to win every week, but you're going to have a damn sight better time trying to.
And as we said earlier, any other day, Italy 31, Scotland 29 is the story of the weekend. From 22-10 down, and, you know, we were getting ready for commentary, but had more than an eye on the game. First half, Scotland played some brilliant stuff. But for Italy to win that, let's focus on Italy rather than Scotland, because it will be easy to go, oh, Scotland again are flattered to deceive, again haven't been able to back up a good win against England, very good win by beating Italy, but it's Italy's side that push France that we know are improving. And what does that win do to the Six Nations as a whole? To show it's not it's not five teams in Italy anymore.
No, you're right. There's a big picture view there, isn't there, on not just the result, but I think the manner of the result. That wasn't necessarily... Well, it wasn't Italy hanging on. Scotland scored late. But for Italy to come back, and yeah, that's genuine test match style performance. And they look connected in certain areas, you know, midfield starting to look, you know, quite connected, quite tidy, physical, abrasive, you know, a little bit dirty at times, which you've got to be if you want to compete against the big boys in the Six Nations. And they're going to take a huge amount, not only out of the game, but obviously out of their preparation. You know, they're getting a lot of things right off the field, which is going to give them the confidence to move their performance on from just hoping for one win a season to maybe challenging. You don't know.
And you report what you see, don't you? And we've seen improvement from Italy, and then they'll put in a performance which makes you think, oh, that's another false dawn. And we've had a few, and the World Cup was one of those where they got thrashed, and you know the end of the Crowley era, and you're like, oh my God, they're going to have to start again. It's all gone, all that sort of. But this was a proper test match performance with familiar names doing good stuff. You know, Menoncello, Brex in the centre, having a game that we thought he could play, and suddenly he's had a breakout. Campozzo at the back, and then Negri's always a strong ball carrier, and it's the same names, and they're starting to deliver. And they didn't win by accident. There wasn't an early red card for Scotland. There wasn't some event in the game like Scotland went 6-2 and lost three backs, and it all fell apart a little bit like Ireland did today. There's no caveat to that win, even though Garbisi hit the flaming post from 5 yards left of the post and 10 yards out after a try. Had another one where the ball fell off the tee on a penalty. That's too much stress for me. He needs to sort out putting the ball on the tee.
Maybe change the tee.
But a bit like...
But then Stones to step up and hit the long ranger to take them a couple clear, yeah.
But they won the game by playing rugby, which is outstanding. I'm chuffed for them.
I've had so many messages coming in saying, can't wait for the Nations pod. Has Tom English phoned in sick? And, you know, Tom, oh, never reluctant to put the boot into England.
I mean, he was down as it was a thrashing, wasn't it, today?
He was, this game, yeah. England-Ireland. Oh, I think he, you know, his catchphrase with England is show me the evidence, and England would say this was the evidence.
His prediction was it was a comprehensive win for Ireland. It wasn't just I think Ireland are going to win.
I don't think Tom is alone, but it is just funny the number of, it's a few England fans getting their own back, I think, because they've had to listen to England getting, you know, knocked about a bit, and you know, they haven't been firing this championship up until today. And then Scotland, who we also anointed the second best team, have again shipped 20 plus points, again coughed up handling errors, and now they've got to go to Dublin.
How many times have we? I mean, I don't know how many Six Nations we've done together, Chris. I think we spoke about it on Thursday on the Five Live show. Every single year, there are at least one upset or one big game that you just don't see coming. We fool ourselves into thinking that, oh, well, Ireland are really good this year and they beat France. Right, they're going to beat everyone. Away they go. Grand Slam's theirs. It just doesn't happen and never will.
And that's the beauty of it, isn't it? We have a little bit of a grumble sometimes about the standards not being great in the opening round or two. And then you have a game like that, like here today in Italy against Scotland, where everything good about the championship is there to see, not just because they're upsets, but because of how much people care. You could just feel it today that, yes, England were nervous, fans were nervous, but nervous with a clenched fist of defiance. It's like, come on, boys, today could be the day. And that's not based on science. It's based on hope and sport and the brilliance of a competition that's hundreds of years old.
Yeah, and guys, we've been down there in the tunnel. We've been there in the dressing room. I don't care whether you're at Twickenham or Imagine England going to Lansdowne Road and everybody saying, well, England are just going to go to Lansdowne Road and they're going to win by 12. Yeah, no problem. They're going to walk it, win by 12. Imagine what the Irish players would be doing. And you know, as an England player, going to those environments, that's going to be it's going to go to the wire.
01, 11,
yeah,
17.
Of course.
Yeah, history's littered with
so
them.
So why would it not be exactly the same? And it was exactly the same. They would be, there's a few of the England players just strolling in from doing some corporate stuff now, they would have been fuming under there. They would have been so angry. I cannot wait to see the Netflix documentary of this game and how much anger there would be in that England dressing room.
But just from where England have been and what we've seen over the last period of time, it would have taken some mystic Meg, or a very brave person, or a person who's not in our positions, who's prepared, not prepared to have people go, ah, you're talking out of your what's it, you're to go, I don't know, I've got a funny feeling about today. Because you could have said it quite easily.
You know from the experience that you've had that there is an ability to become superhuman.
Correct, I agree, and we touched on it pre-match about performances in the past where you're absolutely written off.
Correct, unless you've been in there or been in another sport and have experienced that adrenaline, sort of even like hypnotic state of, yeah, I can be better than actually probably I am week to week, and that's where England were today. I mean, they're totally overperformed. But now they need to realise that they're capable of doing that.
That's what you got to do. And they still won by a point.
Yeah. And although the Six Nations is driven by parochialism, it makes it what it is. You know, if you were looking at this from a huge sort of overview, from a very neutral point of view, you know, upsets are what makes the Six Nations world go round. You know, if we could call all of them and say they're going to go exactly the way as predicted, it wouldn't be much fun. And that's why this championship is so unique and enduring. And just, you know, we drifted off Italy, understandably. They don't always get their dues, but it's putting results on the page, because we can talk all we like about 20s, Benetton, grassroots, connected structures, Italian rugby, talent coming through. But then you get some statement wins and it all starts to make sense, which makes today really tough for Scotland fans. And, you know, it'd be great if they were in a Grand Slam showdown with Ireland, not to be, but, you know, for Italian rugby, it's that kind of vindication, isn't it, of where they're going.
And superb for the tournament, because it needs it. I mean, Italy is just... I went to Rome for Italy, England, and it's just a magnificent place to go to for a sporting contest, and to see the stadium absolutely packed. And it would have sounded not dissimilar to Twickenham today, right at the end, that enormous old Olympic stadium. We questioned the wisdom of moving from Stadio Flaminio, which was in the city, cosy, 28,000, easy to fill, great place to go. And they moved to the Olympic Stadium. Well, now they're filling it and they're winning, which is all anyone's ever really wanted, isn't it? An absolute... You pay your respects to Italy.
And going into that bigger picture for the game, you know, it breeds Italy to get closer to the equality and parity of other sides, and the size of stadium and the coverage and the ticketing and the marketing, yeah, and, you know, it brings it all in together, so that actually the product of rugby can be so much more successful. So I don't know, you know, it is very, very important that we do talk about Italy and we do maintain a positivity about Italy, because it's going to benefit Ireland, it's going to benefit Wales, Scotland, England, France. It's going to benefit the game by having more of those style wins for Italy and more at Stadio Olimpico.
Yeah, and one of the best bits of decision making by an Italian player this week, Louis Leiner. I got England, I've got Australia or Italy. Do you know what? I'm going to play for Italy. Well, and I'm going to score and we're going to win.
Do you want to declare, get selected, yeah, score? I mean, he's thinking, yeah.
What a lad, fair play. Michael must be so happy.
Oh, he's out there. I had a little bit of text with him yesterday.
Yeah.
Him and the family have gone out there.
Forza.
What a decent weekend that's going to be all of a sudden for the Liners.
Well, what a weekend of the Six Nations. And there is still Wales, France to come. What does Cardiff have in store for us. We will, of course, have commentary with Sarah and the team on BBC Sounds and all the usual places. That's Sunday at 3 o'clock, Wales against France. Sarah Orchard, Philippa Toucher and John Barkley. Rugby Union Daily on the whistle as well. Ireland, 16 points. England, 12 points. Scotland, 11. If Ireland win in Dublin, they win the title. If Ireland draw, they win the title. If Ireland lose, England must win with a big win. Try bonus point. Scotland need to do something incredible and overturn what's a 76 points difference with Ireland. But even if it is Ireland's title next week, what a day of Six Nations rugby has been. This great old championship, well and truly alive and kicking in 2024. Loads more to come from Cardiff. Loads more to come through the week on the Rugby Union Daily. You will not miss a thing with us from Twickenham, from the lawnmowers, from the darkened Twickenham skies, from Matt Dawson, from Paul Grayson. Tommy Bowe is almost at the airport, you'd imagine now. Very good night.
The Players Channel from BBC Radio 5 Live.
Get inside the footballing minds of Premier League icons with The Players Channel. From the Footballers Football Podcast with Mikel Antonio and Callum Wilson.
This goal scoring little thing kind of went pop.
Since I've joined the podcast, my career's got to par feet.
To Football First with Troy Deeney and Jermaine Defoe.
Pablo Canio don't sit on the bench. He got up, walked out, gone. And they come in Monday morning normal.
The Players Channel. Listen on BBC Sounds.